Welcome to Quantum of Solace number 86, and this one's a wee bit different because we're going to do a review of a very significant day, and I've got rid of my compatriot Al because we just can't cope with him anymore, and I've got this very, very nice Englishman who's now actually our boss, Dr. Andy Bannister. Andy, welcome. It was your first Solace conference on Saturday. What did you think?
Well, it was fantastic, actually. So we were in Edinburgh, weren't we? We partnered with Charlotte Chapel down there for this conference on sexuality, society and the church, about 300 people. And I was blown away, actually. I was blown away by the quality of the speakers. Well, most of the speakers. There was some Scottish guy there who, you know, Robertson guy. But
yeah, if you start low, then it builds up.
It builds up from there. But we also had people like Ed Shaw from Living Out and others. It was wonderful. But also what amazed me as well was the diversity of the audience.
Yeah.
There. We had young and old, huge number of university students there, and just this real hunger, I think, for people to really get into the issues that we were talking about. And that's the thing that consistently impresses me, that I think Christians are aware that we need to be thinking through some of the things that we talked about at the conference, and I really want to do so. There's a real desire to get good answers on this stuff.
Well, if someone said to you, look, Solace held this conference on sexuality, sex, society and the church, and really, we can imagine what it was like. It's kind of a evangelical Nuremberg rally hate fest. Did that describe what happened?
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right. That's often the perception. I mean, there's a number of perceptions, aren't there? I think there's a perception that Christians are obsessed with sex. And then when we do talk about these things, all we are doing is going out banging away. What I found so impressive about that conference, I mean, the standout highlight for me was Ed Shaw from Living Out, but also some of the other interviewees. I mean, Ed, for those of you who aren't aware of him, he is same-sex attracted, but has really thought through as a Christian what it means to live out biblically what the biblical teaching on sex is, but also the way to communicate that to others in a way that's really positive. And I think the big takeaway from Ed's talk that, for me, I think people need to hear time and time again, one of the reasons that I think people struggle with this issue, whether it's Christians thinking it through or the way we're sometimes perceived, is we live in this world in which people have made sex and the act of sex, you know, the greatest human good. The whole point of life is to have sex and sleep with somebody. And if that's the whole point, the sum total of human good, then of course, as Christians, how on earth can you stand there and say to somebody who's same-sex attracted, well, I'm sorry, you can't sleep with somebody of the same sex.
Yeah.
If, though, the whole point of life is not, as a Christian, about having sex, but the highest human good is to know God and have a relationship with Christ, that is far more beautiful than anything else, then it puts a number of things into perspective. And so one of the things we need to address as Christians, I think, for too long, we've been swept along with this idea that sex is the sum total of human good. And the way we talk about marriage, for example, we've idolized the family. I think that's deeply hurtful to those who are not just SSA, but to those who are single and are unmarried. And also, it's unthroned Christ. The sum total of human good is not marriage, it's not sex, it's not family, it's not having children. The purpose of that you and I put here is to know Christ.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me in terms of the conference, that it was an angle I hadn't really expected, was when Ed spoke about his situation, because he holds to biblical teaching, it means he'd be single. And he just made me think, as a pastor, about more about single people in the church, how we deal with singleness. And I thought his approach was biblical. I thought it was compassionate. I thought it was pastorally sensitive. I actually just thought it was wonderful. And I found it very moving, actually.
Yeah, I think so. I think I appreciate the honesty. And for those who haven't checked out Ed's story, you can go to livingout.org and he shares it. I think for a number of reasons, I think it was helpful, David. I think the compassion piece is what is sometimes missing. I think one of the reasons that Christians, we sometimes get in trouble on these issues of sexuality and these very emotive subjects, is we sort of bang away and we give the biblical perspective, which is absolutely important, but we do so in a way that doesn't actually remember that we're also dealing with people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was shared in one of the talks that has also made a, you know, it's not the first time I've heard it, but made a big impact on me, it's very interesting to look at Jesus, because something very interesting is going on in the church. There are almost sort of two voices you sometimes hear in the church. There are those who say, look, we just need to affirm and hug and embrace people. It doesn't matter what their background. Don't for want of a word, call sin sin, because you'll exclude people. And on the other hand, you have people who are saying, well, no, we need to be banging away and telling people that wrong is wrong and standing up for moral truth. I think both of those extremes are mistaken. And we see that in Jesus. Because Jesus is able to take a stand morally. Good grief, he doesn't compromise. But he's also able to do so in such a way that he wins people. And as was pointed out, you look at the ministry of Jesus, most of his time, what he does is he alienates the religious people. Who are the people who won't touch him? It's not the prostitutes and the tax collectors, it's the sinners. They come, they're flocking to him. It's the Pharisees, it's the religious leadership of the day who want nothing to do with him. Yet those very people whom he's calling out on the brokenness in their lives flock to him. And the challenge for us in the church is, how do we do the same thing? How do we talk honestly and uncompromisingly about the things that we believe, but with such a love of people, such a genuine love, not just the words, but real demonstrable care for people who are wrestling with some of these deepest questions? They want to come to the doors of our churches. And Jesus offers us a model for how to do that. And I think it's supremely challenging to reflect on.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think the other thing there is the complexities of things. So, for example, you're not making political points. You're not giving people a formula. Everyone is absolutely different. So some of the feedback we get from people, I mean, it was great that there were people there who are same-sex attracted and so on, but things are complex. And then there's the cultural side of it as well. So, for example, there were two groups of people, if you like, almost at opposite ends of the spectrum that I think would have found some aspects, I mean, I know found some aspects of the day difficult. There were older people for whom to have a Christian stand up and say, I am same-sex attracted. In one sense, that was quite difficult. They had to move outside their box to understand what that meant. You know, I'm faithful to what the Bible says, but I'm this. I'm not going for therapy. I'm not, you know, going for reconversion therapy or whatever. And then on the other hand, you have younger people who are being brought up in this very culture where, you know, homophobia is a great sin, and anything that even smells of that, they're going, whoa, 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 whoa. And some of the more general stuff, and looking at some of the more biblical teaching and so on, there's a kind of reaction there as well. So it was good to have, I think, people challenged across the board. Not just those two, but, you know, others as well. I mean, I personally found the day very challenging and encouraging, and it certainly made me think about things. I think that was the purpose, wasn't it?
I think so. And I think the single, I guess, biggest takeaway message for me was the transforming power of the gospel.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that, that Ed, I guess speaker shared in here, one of his talks, I think really, you know, really kind of hit me, was actually during the Q&A, it was during the panel discussion at the end. And I don't know if you remember this, David, he was asked the question, Ed, are you praying for, are you hoping that God will take away this, the same-sex attraction that you have? Should Christians who are same-sex attracted be praying for that? And his answer was phenomenal. I mean, he said, look, here's the way I look at this. He said, I liken it to cancer. He said, imagine that I have cancer. You know, am I hoping that God will cure that, that they'll be healed in the here and now? Well, yeah, it'd be great if it is. But what I do know, even if it isn't, there will come a day in the new heavens and the new earth when that will finally be dealt with, and I'll be fully restored into what it means to be fully authentically human as I walk and talk with Jesus again. And he said, that's the way I think about being same-sex attracted. It may be that God deals with that and restores that here and now, and that's wonderful. But if he doesn't, I know that that is that promise of that transformation in the age to come. And I think sometimes as Christians, I don't think we hold on to enough to the transforming power of the gospel. We sort of sometimes sort of, without meaning to, preach a message that says sort of, you know, become a Christian, kind of get your ticket to heaven, and then just, you know, desperately try and keep your nose morally clean for most of your life. And, you know, Jesus will give you a pat on the head at the end, rather than this, the radical idea at the heart of the Christian faith is that it's not about God going, right, come on, sort your lives out and stand up and get on with it. It's about God going, no, you can't measure up. You can't deal with this brokenness, but what I can do is fill you with my spirit and give you the power to do so. And that power of transformation is actually what's missing when you look at the other great religions of the world. I mean, I've studied Islam for 25 years. There's nothing equivalent there to Islam. There's simply a list of commandments, keep them, and if you fall down, bad luck on you.
Yeah.
The Christian faith is this power of sanctification, the work of the Spirit, that we don't often talk about enough. And I love the fact that was all over Saturday's conference. It's extremely empowering, extremely exciting, and it just makes me fall even more in love with Jesus.
Yeah, and I think the transforming thing, an illustration of that, I mean, that was your first time in Charlotte Chapel, the new Charlotte Chapel. And that's an amazing story. I mean, they were great, weren't they? The way they helped us, the way they ran that conference really in their new building, right in the heart of Edinburgh, building that can seat 750 people. That's transforming. Seeing a church being transformed like that is something that you can see a city being transformed. And so it was lovely to partner with them, wasn't it?
I think so. And I think the other thing, actually, this is potentially a rabbit trail, but, you know, if we can't do rabbit trails on quantum, where can we do them? Yeah. Is one of the things I've noticed, I've been in Scotland now, David, for kind of 5 weeks, 5.5 weeks, and the number of stories I'm hearing of churches where similar things happening. Yeah. I mean, in the last kind of few weeks, I must have met a dozen or so pastors in different churches, some larger, some smaller. And it's the same story, that actually there's growth happening. I've been away from the UK 7 years. There's a lot of change happening in those 7 years. And one of them is, I think something is happening. There's a sort of wind of change coming through the UK church, green shoots everywhere. And in fact, I've mentioned it, I don't know if I mentioned it on this podcast, but a friend of mine a couple of years ago wrote a book called God's Unwelcome Recovery. You can find it on Amazon if you're listening.
I just finished it yesterday.
Good book, eh?
It is a good book.
And one of the things that Sean does, Sean Oliver D, who wrote that book, tells in that book is just the untold story of the fact that the church is growing in many places in the UK. The media doesn't like to talk about this because they love this sort of narrative that all is doom and gloom. But Sean points out Christians don't often like to talk about it. Quite why is a mystery. I think maybe because, you know, as a sort of dour English and Scottish types, we like to sit around and tell ourselves stories about how the culture is going to hell in a handcart. But there's exciting stuff happening. Charlotte Chapel is just one of those stories. Yeah, God is on the move.
That was encouraging. And I have to say that our own Solas boys did a good job as well working with all of that. I'm going to ask you something before we finish about Belfast and Inverness, just to broaden our scope a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Before we do that, maybe I can just mention something on the wider issue that in terms of the culture. And we will come back to this. This is going to come again and again. One of the reactions I got on Saturday after my own talk, and these talks will be available through the website, was shock from some people. One lady came up to me in tears actually saying, you know, I can hardly believe it. She said, I suspect it's true. And she said, I can hardly believe it. And there was just a couple of incidences. I said that, you know, these things are coming in like a flood. And I was preaching in Charlotte the next day, and a lady came up to me and said, I didn't really believe you about what's going on in the schools. And yet last night I went to a school concert, and there was the poster, if you want to be called Z or here or they. And she said, I couldn't believe it. The very thing you were talking about in the morning. And she said, I'm a teacher, retired, but I didn't realize this was going on. And that is what's going on. And we'll also put a link to another story that broke just after the conference, which is the BBC's story about the CBBC website, where they put a children's program, but an 11-year-old's struggle to secure hormones that makes it easier to have a sex change operation, and the fuss that's come out of that. And these wider cultural things are part of the backdrop. The whole point of doing what we're doing is not politics or even the wider cultural things. They're the backdrop, but it's trying to interact and work with broken people in a messed up world. And messed up world means that you're going to Northern Ireland. Sorry, Tara.
Oh, I can see the phones lighting up now, David, and the angry emails coming in.
What are you doing in Belfast?
Yeah, so it's exciting. I'm off to Belfast this coming weekend. There's a group of Christians there called the Northern Ireland Christian Apologetics Network, who are really beginning to sort of look at how they can work together as churches and Christians from a range of denominations to do some of the stuff that we're doing here at Solas. How can they be impacting the culture and sharing their faith in a way that engages? So they're bringing me out for a weekend. So we're doing everything ranging from starting with a big youth event on a Friday night where young people are going to fire questions at me for a couple of hours. On the Saturday, we've got a conference in Belfast with hundreds coming, and then doing some preaching and some outreach events, some sort of quench type events over the weekend as well. So the best way for people who are sort of listening to this to catch up with what I'm doing, go to my Facebook page is the easiest thing. Find me. I'm all over social media, and there'll be links, there'll be stories and photographs. We're excited though, because you and I were talking about this earlier, but of course the vision for Solas was never just Scotland. You know, important as Scotland is and beautiful and glorious as it is to go, I think there are so many other places we can be seeing Solas have an impact. And there's obviously a very obvious got a Celtic connection there to our friends in Ireland. So we're excited. I'm excited to be out there this weekend, and looking forward to what happens there.
I mean, you'll love Northern Ireland. It's just the great. And
there 30 years ago is the last time I was there.
So. You'll fit in, Andy. Don't worry. You'll be all right. And just remember, when they ask, how's the crack? You're not talking about drugs, okay? When you go up to Inverness, it's the same thing as well. And speaking of Inverness, we're going there. Why do we want people to come?
Why do you want to go? Yeah, exactly. You and I are off there, aren't we? And we're also being joined by Michael Ramsden from the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics, for listeners who know Michael. And so we've got this great event coming up on Saturday the 19th of November. It's called Reaching the Highlands. And the best way to find out about it is go to the Solas website or Facebook page. Basically, the aim of that is a conference taking place at Smithton Free Church, is the venue we're using. And basically, it's intended for anyone who's sort of thinking about or wrestling with, how can I talk about my faith as a Christian at work, at school, at university, in a way that's natural, in a way that perhaps, you know, overcomes the fears that I might have of people asking me difficult questions or objections. So it's a day designed to kind of empower people, equip people, and get people excited about the prospect of evangelism. And I think the other key reason we're doing it, it'd be very easy for an organization like Solas to kind of restrict ourselves to the central belt, right? We can just busy ourselves batting around between Dundee and Glasgow and Edinburgh, and, you know, and not really getting up into the Highlands. But there is so much more to Scotland than just those places I've listed. So I think it's really putting a foot confidently on the map and saying, look, the vision for Solas going forward is we want to be, you know, impacting the whole of this great country and further afield, whether it's in terms of engaging our skeptical friends who don't know Christ and presenting the Christian faith in a way that's persuasive, or like the Reaching the Highlands conference, getting out there and helping Christians do the same. So I don't know about you, I'm hugely excited for the end of the month.
Well, I'm from that area, so of course...
That explains a lot.
I'm excited to be going home in that sense. Can I just encourage folks to come along, whatever denominational background you are, Mike and Andy are certainly worth listening to, and I think it'll be a very, very profitable and encouraging day. We shall return to our normal format next week, but meanwhile, thank you for being with us, and thanks for the encouragement that we've received in recent days, and we continue to pray for the nations of this world, all that's going on, the American election coming up, stuff that's going on, continued Brexit fallout in the UK, the whole arguments about culture and sexuality, the whole decline and growth in the church at the same time, ISIS, everything else, it's all still happening, and we thank the Lord that he is on the throne and look forward to hearing more about his work next week.
Yo. We're part of a culture that really loves to hate us. Every chance they get, they attempt to isolate and debate us. It's not that they don't like us, it's just they don't like God in us. It's common knowledge, and oddly enough, it makes a lot of sense to a lot of us. We completely understand because we used to occupy the same space and lived in a similar type state until we tasted of God's grace. So we continue loving this world that so easily rejects us and passionately press past the lack of their cultural acceptance. And as if there weren't enough problems for us gaining influence, we keep fighting over the issue of what's too worldly of a Christian to make a difference. So no matter how you paint it or politically campaign it, whether you water it down and drain it, it's really all the same, ain't it? It's the same frustration, same constant segregation. Christians living like aliens trying to relate with citizens of a different nation. What always makes for a better presentation than bark and bite is a proper understanding of living life filled with salt and light. So we walk this fine line of walking in light of God's kindness and live with a sense of worldliness without the fear of compromising. Loving God and neighbor until Christ comes to split the sky or die in a society hailing Jesus as Messiah. Yep.